Good morning. Welcome back to your morning conversation here on KXCV. Karen W., I'm Jeremy Werner, and joining me as she has for every Friday this month is Dr. Jessica Gracie.
Hello.
Teaches politics, history, head of the department at Northwest Missouri State University. And I kind of want to start off when we look back at this week in politics once again with kind of all the rallies and stuff that happened. But I think the thing I want to focus on is how the campaigns are going to states that aren't swing states. And what I mean by that is we saw Harris in Texas this week. We saw Trump in New York this week. And according to 538, which is my go-to for polls, Harris is currently leading by 17 points in New York, and Trump is leading by 7 points in Texas. So why are they stopping off in states they probably won't win?
Yeah, it's a good question because it does seem like a weird sort of strategy, especially when the race is so close in those swing states. It almost makes more sense to focus on those. But there could be a couple reasons. One, I mean, there are a lot of Republicans in New York, and there's a lot of Democrats in Texas, even though obviously the states are going to go a different way. It could help to sort of mobilize voters, maybe encourage donations or something like that, especially as we're getting kind of close to the end. And also, I think there's always this sort of push or impulse to say that they didn't sort of leave any state behind, right? They didn't ignore any state. There's always this sort of criticism that they focus so much on the swing states. And yeah, those are mostly the only states they pay attention to. But there is some value just in like the looking like they're paying attention to all of the voters, even though they're not going to win those states.
Well, that makes sense. The other thing that I guess people are talking about when they go do these campaigns, and these are kind of the faults of both candidates that people are saying, is Harris is being asked, I think she's been asked a few times now, what is it that you would have done differently if you were president these past 4 years instead of Biden? And she's coming out and saying nothing, which is upsetting people. And then, of course, on the flip side for Trump's campaign, he's going out there and doing things that people are saying are a sign of his age or dementia. I'm in the field I'm in because I don't know anything about mental health, so I'm not going to speculate on that, but what do you see from these complaints about the candidates?
Yeah, I think, well, I'll start with the Harris one first. So I think she's in sort of a tricky position in that she wants to distinguish herself from Biden, but she also doesn't want to criticize him too much, right? I mean, she is part of his administration, and there are still a lot of Biden supporters, you know, in the Democratic Party that are going to be voting for her, and they, you know, she doesn't want to make them too angry. I think it's also tricky, too, because, I mean, I think Trump has made a pretty good criticism of her, of like, well, if you want to change all this stuff, why didn't you change it in the past 3.5 years? And I think vice presidents don't often have that much power, really. And so I think it's sort of tricky for her to make it seem like, yes, I've had this authority as vice president, that's why I'm ready to be president, but also she hasn't really been able to do a whole lot because vice presidents can't really do a whole lot. I think she's in a really tricky position of wanting to set herself separate from Biden, but not too separate from Biden to, make the people who do still really like him and support him angry. And she owes a lot of her success currently to him picking her as vice president, too. So she obviously probably doesn't want to make him angry either. As far as the criticisms of Trump, I think it's very interesting because his campaign style has changed a little bit from 4 years ago and from 8 years ago, but not drastically. And so, yes, his rallies have always been him just sort of going off on random tangents, and that's always been a big appeal to a lot of his supporters, is that he doesn't go on script, he tells it like it is. It feels like he's been doing that a little bit more this year, and so yeah, is that a sign of any sort of cognitive problems or whatever? Who knows, right? I think it's really hard to know. Is that just him ramping up his personality now that he kind of feels like he can be free to, because he's not really going to face many consequences from his supporters by sort of going even more off script and even more on off tangent? Is that why?
So when we talked way back in July, which feels now like 89 years ago, we talked about the criticisms at the time of Biden's age. It was in the media everywhere. It was being discussed by politicians in D.C., members of the Democratic Party in the House and Senate. Why aren't we seeing that same kind of discussion with Trump? He's not that much younger than Biden. He's 78 and I or 77. Sorry, I can't remember. But
78, I think. I just looked it up this morning.
Okay, and soon he'll be 79 and nearing the 80 range, which Biden is now. So how come the discussion isn't as like prominent as it was with Biden?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because, yeah, Trump's only 2 years younger than Biden. And so that was, I think, a very, you know, accurate criticism of Biden, you know, that we saw over the summer, that, like, is he too old to run for president again? I mean, yes, he is the oldest president we've ever had. If Trump wins, he would be the oldest president elected, right? So he would be, you know, if he serves a four-year term, older than Biden is now at the end of his term. And so I think, why aren't we seeing that criticism? Well, obviously, Republicans have no incentive to make that criticism. At this point, it's obviously too late to replace Trump with anyone else at the top of the ticket. In the summer, it wasn't, I mean, it was kind of seen as too late, but apparently was not too late to replace Biden at the top of the ticket. Why aren't we seeing that criticism from Democrats as much? I think we're seeing it in some ways where they're talking about, like, his cognitive decline, right? I think is in some ways a criticism of his age, right? But without actually calling out his age. And I think it's because it's hard for Democrats to criticize Trump's age without inadvertently also criticizing Biden and maybe implying that Biden is not capable of being president currently. And that's not really a conversation that Democrats really are going to benefit from, right? If it turns into that side of that argument. So I think that's probably why we're not quite seeing as much about how old he is, but rather other ways that he might be unfit that, yeah, sure, might relate to his age, but are not a direct, you know, call out to how old he is.
And this is just a reflection of the media cycle just this past week. But I kind of want to start with 538, which predicts the presidential election based on like 100 simulations. And throughout the week, it's gone from Harris wins 51 times out of 100 to Trump wins 51 times out of 100. It changes every day. It's a very close race. And everyone keeps saying, especially this past week, because of what we've learned from former generals under Trump, is Trump immune to an October surprise? Because we went through this in 2016 with the Access Hollywood tape. And to put this in perspective for people who may not be old enough or don't remember, October surprises before something like the Access Hollywood tape was George W. Bush drove drunk once. Before that, it was a hostage crisis in Iran. So the idea of an October surprise has been around for a while. It just hasn't been this, I guess the word would be salacious.
Yeah.
So is he immune?
I don't want to say he's fully immune, but mostly I think immune. I saw some people on TikTok talking about before the news actually dropped of what it was, that, ooh, there's going to be this big October surprise. It's going to be career ending for Trump. And everyone was like, how is it going to be career ending when you've already had all these things that have happened that have come out about him that were supposed to be career ending, right? And then they weren't. And so I think there are so many of Trump's supporters that aren't going to care or aren't going to believe a lot of times these sort of stories that come out about him. You know, he's, I think, positioned his supporters in a pretty effective way to be perhaps too skeptical of what they hear on the news. And so when they hear these things, I think it's either going to not matter to them or they're not going to believe it. And so it's probably not going to have that much of an impact. But not everyone who is going to be voting for Trump is a, like, super Trump supporter, right? And so there are those people that are sort of on the edges of well, yeah, I guess I'm going to vote for Trump, you know, rather than Harris. Or maybe, I don't know, or maybe I won't vote, or maybe I'll vote for third party. And maybe if they hear those things, that might shift them. So I don't think he's fully immune, but I think a good chunk of his supporters are not going to change their minds.
And I don't want to make this all about Trump. So I my next question is kind of on the idea of, has Trump changed how we view politicians? Because, you know, just years ago, we saw Fetterman come out of nowhere. And, you know, he's very just a salt of the earth fella. He says what's on his mind. He doesn't care who he, you know, makes mad. Mm-hmm. Even people in his own party. We've seen Walz, the VP pick for Harris, come out and use sometimes salty language. I can't repeat any of them or else the FCC will fine us. So has Trump kind of broken a few of the things that would have been October surprises for all politicians?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely, and I don't think it's just him too. I think it is a lot of other politicians. I think he was able to be as successful because we just had this sort of trend towards sort of more casualness in our presidential candidates and our campaigns, to make candidates feel more appealing, right, to normal everyday people. And he's sort of definitely ramped that up and changed it. And so yeah, I mean, I think that definitely does sort of change how we see candidates. And yeah, definitely.
Okay. The other thing I kind of wanted to get to for October surprises is just why all these things, because it's not all Access Hollywood tape. This week has specifically been about a former general saying that, you know, Trump is a fascist and mm-hmm. has, you know, a fatuation with Hitler.
Right.
And it appears it hasn't, I guess, worried anybody. And, you know, that it's difficult as a journalist to kind of cover Trump because mm-hmm. as soon as you say these things, you're kind of demonized for repeating them. But it's also news because it is a former four-star general, someone who took an oath to defend the Constitution. And in this general's mind, defending the Constitution is explaining this. So why is it that we've kind of, I guess, lost sight of that and aren't believing these generals?
Yeah, I think that Trump has done so many things that would be pushing the envelope and seem so outlandish that then anytime something new comes out, it's kind of not as surprising, right? So when people hear this, are they shocked the way they would have been about any other candidate, you know, 8, 12, however many years ago, if this had come out weeks before the election, it would have been shocking news. But with so many of the things that Trump has said in the past, it's sort of not all that surprising or shocking. And so therefore, I just don't think it gains the traction with a lot of, you know, news media or the people that are consuming the news media or on social media, that they're just kind of like, well, yeah, no, that, okay, I believe that. That makes sense. And kind of shrugging their shoulders. And so I think that's kind of why it's not kind of gaining as much traction. And yeah, I mean, I get it. You know, the news media has a really hard time of sort of pointing these things out about Trump without feeling like they're kind of playing favorites, right? It gets really tricky.
The final thing I have, and it's difficult to kind of summarize the past week in politics because we have so much media covering so much, but mm-hmm. the thing that's really stuck out to me is early voting, which has started across the country. The question I have is, well, it's kind of a two-part question. A, why does it benefit, based on the numbers we're seeing, it's benefiting Democrats and women? So I guess my first part of the question would be, why is that? And then second would be, you know, it's become a bigger and bigger thing to early vote as opposed to years past where it seemed like everyone was just kind of stuck on doing it on Tuesday. So are we kind of breaking outside this mold to just solely vote on one day?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why it's become a bigger thing is because more and more states have allowed it. Whereas before there were very few states that did, there's been a lot of push in a lot of states, mostly democratically controlled state legislatures that have pushed for more and more access to early voting. And so, yeah, I think we are going to kind of continue to see that push where voting is not just on Tuesday. Why does it benefit Democrats? I'm not really sure. I know that there's definitely been a push from the DNC and other Democratic leaders to go vote early. I haven't really seen a similar push from Republican candidates and from the RNC. And so that certainly might be why, is that they're being mobilized to vote early rather than just vote on Tuesday. And it makes sense because, yeah, the earlier you can get people to vote, you know, who knows what might happen in people's lives before now and election day that might make it difficult to vote. I think it's pretty clear to me, at least, why it might benefit female voters more is, you know, a lot of female voters have a whole lot of time commitments between childcare and working, and it might make it a lot trickier for them to find time to vote on just that one day. That there are lots of men that have those commitments too, but women's time is often a lot more sort of difficult to find. So.
And I don't have a final question. I just forgot to preface it by saying the numbers I was looking at, it showed 15% of the 9 million registered in Pennsylvania already early voted. 8% of them were women, which is a staggeringly high number, especially when you break down to metrics. But I think we'll end it there because we have so much more to cover and so much more next week, the final push. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank you, Dr. Racy, for joining me again once again this morning. And I thank everybody for listening.